Well, Australia's not the only country wrestling with its energy future, but some countries are decidedly clearer about their direction. Just over a week ago, environment ministers from around the world met in Beijing to discuss renewable energy. Now, the upshot, according to Time magazine, was that China has taken on the mantle of the world's climate change leader. The US, since the Trump administration took over, can no longer claim that, according to the magazine. But first, China has to move away from coal, so we thought we'd get an update on how that's going. I'm joined by Xi Zhezhou, who is based in Beijing. He's a senior director of IHS Market. That's a global professional services company. He's with their power, gas, renewables and coal group. Welcome, Xi Zhezhou.
Good morning.
And in Washington, in the NPR studio, is Jeremy Schreifels, a visiting fellow at Resources for the Future. It's an environmental and energy think tank based in Washington, D.C. Hello, Jeremy.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Xi Zhezhou, you made what seems to be a rather bold statement at a recent forum at the Wilson Center in Washington. You said that if China were to make a bolder move towards clean energy right now, it could claim it's at peak coal use already, or at least would reach that peak in the next couple of years. That would be quite an epic moment, would it not?
Look, yes, absolutely. We are seeing some signs the past couple of years that coal usage and coal consumption may have peaked. And there are a few factors that's really driven us to this point. And then one is really the larger demand side, economic transition away from some of the heavy industries that consume a lot of energy. And the other piece is the heavy investment on the non-coal technologies like wind and solar and nuclear. Our current outlook is still that we probably won't see an absolute peak in coal until sometime in the mid to late 2020s. But we are already seeing some signs of plateau of coal consumption. And should the government policy on those two fronts I just mentioned become a lot more progressive, we could actually see coal may have peaked the past couple of years.
And is this across China or only in the coastal areas? Because I gather this is quite an important distinction.
Yes, it's a great point. So coastal China is where a lot of these things are happening. And many of you might have heard that the huge smog problems that the cities in the coastal areas have encountered the past 5 years or so. And that's really being a huge driver in terms of getting coal out of the energy mix in the coast. But also the coastal areas, for example, today account for over half of the electricity generation in the country.
But yeah, but you've still got new coal stations being built in the interior, I read.
Yes. So the interior provinces were still looking at last year, more than 50 gigawatts of new coal plants being built.
Wow.
Now, that's a lot less than before. 2005, we're talking 80 gigawatts, which is, you know, just under the size of the UK. But with the coastal areas moving away, inland still building some, there's an offset effect here.
So how do you see it, Jeremy? Do you think China is on track for a late 20s or 2030 peak carbon?
I do. There are a number of credible research organizations within China that have looked at this question. And I think almost universally, they come to the conclusion that China is on the path to peak carbon emissions by 2030, with many of them saying as early as 2025. And the national government has really set a number of ambitious energy as well as climate targets in the current five-year plan. I think if the government meets those targets and continues to be ambitious into the next five-year plan, I think 2025 is really within reach, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, tell us about that five-year plan then.
Sure. So China's government, the national government, uses five-year plans as social and economic directives that really provide a roadmap to the national, provincial, and local policymakers. What's important to know with these targets is that achieving the targets affects the policymakers' and the regulators' career prospects. So these are taken very seriously. And the current five-year plan, which is China's 13th, runs from 2016 through 2020. And in this five-year plan, there are what I think are four significant energy and climate targets. First of all, reducing the amount of energy used per GDP, this is called energy intensity, by 15%, capping the total amount of energy consumption in the economy, increasing non-fossil energy up to 15% of total energy consumption. And then the last one would be reducing CO2 emissions intensity. So that's the amount of CO2 that's emitted for every renminbi or RMB of a GDP, and that would be by 18%.
And there's a broader framework behind this, isn't it? It's the expression of a much bigger ambition?
It is. We focus on climate, but really there's a much broader strategic goal. I mean, these are designed to meet the Copenhagen Pledge, where China agreed to reduce CO2 emissions intensity by 40 to 45%. But it's also related to restructuring of the economy, shifting away from heavy industry to both services as well as higher value-added industries, enhancing energy security, and very importantly, addressing the air pollution challenges that Xi Jojo mentioned earlier.
So, Xi Jojo, in the meantime, despite all of these great ambitions, we've got this money being spent. It's 50 gigawatt stations, you know, they're big because it's so cheap. Surely this must play into the minds and hearts of some of those very ambitious local mayors and people trying to climb up the greasy pole from the, interior of China.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the government targets and then the officials' really commitment to them, we've seen the environmental targets become more important. But as we're talking about the five-year plans, actually one of the things that a lot of people have put doubts on these five-year plans is that oftentimes these targets are not met. And in fact, we looked at some of the key energy targets, about 15, 20 of them. And really, the last five-year plan, only four of them actually came in within 10% of the actual.
So, why are you so optimistic about this, the next stage then?
So what's different is I think the government is realizing that, these five-year plan things are really from the socialist planning economies. And it's becoming harder and harder to really plan the economy when it's been liberalized, when it's become a lot more dynamic. So for the first time, they actually gave a type of these targets. And one is called non-binding, the ones that they realize are going to be hard to really for them to plan. And the rest, there's a few that are called binding targets. And some of the ones that Jeff mentioned are exactly these binding targets.
Mm. So, I mean, Jeremy, obviously the nature of industry matters here, because heavy industry, I would assume, is still very much wanting reasonably priced fossil fuel. So is that part of this too, that where the government is trying to force through these targets a change to a different type of industry?
That is part of it, looking to shift away from some of the heavier industries, but also for many of those industries, looking at becoming much more efficient. So there are significant programs designed to enhance the energy efficiency of factories and power stations, but also looking at alternative fuels. So in many regions, particularly the coastal regions, they've been shifting away from coal, moving toward natural gas when possible. There are some regions like the city of Beijing, which is working to be a coal-free zone.
They're probably importing that natural gas from us. We've got a very, very hot debate here at the moment about whether the Asia area is getting our gas much cheaper than we're paying for it here.
Australia is about to become the biggest LNG exporter in the world, right? And Qatar used to be the biggest one. And yes, the coast of China has a lot of Australian contracts coming in. In fact, the past 6 months or so, LNG imports have become the most important source of natural gas consumption.
Is that right?
But I think the challenge here is that there is still an economic story. Coastal China are relatively more affluent. They can afford gas more. If we look at power generation cost of using gas to generate electricity, it's about three times the cost of coal today still. Three times the cost of coal today still. And so that is still a challenge on the economic front. But coastal China was willing to do it and will continue to do it because they have more affluent population and the smog problem is becoming a key issue.
Let's just talk about that natural gas coming into China because it's coming from all directions, isn't it?
Yes. So China currently takes natural gas from multiple countries. About 30% of total gas supply are imports. And roughly about half of that imports come from pipelines in Central Asia and Myanmar. And the rest are LNG from really anywhere you can imagine.
So China, Jeremy, really is not nearly energy self-sufficient, which of course has a big impact on their foreign policy.
China's very, I guess we could say, blessed or possibly cursed with a very large supply of cheap, easily accessible coal. But they don't have the resources for natural gas and oil that many other countries do. So they're going to be reliant on that, probably for the long term. But the shift toward renewables and the shift toward lighter industry and services and also the push for energy efficiency also works to promote energy security.
And tell us about the One Belt, One Road strategy. Is this all part of the energy debate?
I think it's becoming part of the energy debate. So the One Belt, One Road initiative is, it's really a development strategy trying to link the countries in the broader Asia and Eurasia region. And so they are really focusing on infrastructure development and integrating infrastructure within the region. And that means the electric power systems, the transportation systems. In particular, it has two relevant pieces to it. The first is that's a lot of infrastructure going in, and that will require a lot of commodities like iron and steel and cement, which will put pressure on achieving some of the targets that they've set. And I think the second strategy is it may not affect China's emissions directly, but may affect the carbon emissions from the neighboring countries, because one open question is whether this initiative through the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, which China has set up as part of this strategy, whether that will fund coal plants in the broader Eurasia region.
Yeah, we met the head of that recently here on Saturday Extra. Final remark to you, Zhizhou, is this One Belt, One Road policy, does it matter in terms of the development of a different energy base for China?
It may not matter too much domestically, but for Asia Pacific as a whole, I think it does mean more investment. You know, I'm in Singapore this week. I was in India last week. And the amount of new energy that will be required in this region, especially developing parts of the world, are huge. You know, India's power consumption is still just a quarter of China's. And China is still a fraction of, say, Europe and North America. So there's much need to actually bring power to people in this region. And to me, there's a much needed investment. If it could come from Chinese companies and the Chinese government, it would certainly help bringing up the overall quality of life in many parts of South and Southeast Asia.
If I could just add to that, I think watching the air quality debate will be important, because that really is the driver, because the citizens are justifiably very concerned about that. And so there's a lot of political pressure to address air quality. And that can be done in an effective way that yields significant climate benefits, or it can be done in a way that exacerbates the climate problem. Mm. So it'll be interesting to watch to see how they address it.
Very interesting. Thank you both very much, Zhizhou Zhou and Jeremy Schreifels.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.